Hey guys, welcome back to That Canadian Podcast. I'm your host and that Canadian, Sam. Before we dive into today's episode, I just want to talk about a couple things really quickly. First things first, I'd like to thank you for your patience over the past couple of weeks. We've lost 4 family members this year, and with each one, it just keeps getting harder and harder. And the first family member we lost this year was my husband and I's 15-year-old nephew. His name was Matthew Duffy. And in the month of November, he presented with symptoms of a ruptured appendix. So my sister-in-law took him to the hospital, and it was discovered that he had a really bad infection in his abdomen. So before they could do anything, they had to give him antibiotics. So after going to CHEO to make sure that that was correct, they agreed that it was an infection in his abdomen, and they sent him home after a couple of days of being monitored. And he was supposed to go back in about 4 to 5 weeks, I believe. And after being home for about 3 weeks, things got worse. His abdomen had swollen. My sister-in-law said it looked like he was pregnant with triplets. And so obviously he was rushed to the hospital, and he was taken by ambulance. Actually, I can't remember if he was taken by ambulance or if he was airlifted to CHEO, which was about 2 hours away from where we lived. And he underwent surgery pretty quickly. And during surgery, once they opened him up, they discovered that he was riddled with cancer. Nobody knew. He was fine. He, like I said, the only thing that he was talking about was how he felt sick, like he had a flu within a few days before he was taken to the hospital. And then as things got worse, they took him to the hospital, and we just thought it was a ruptured appendix. Other than that, he was totally fine. And apparently this cancer had spread through his whole body. And during surgery, his heart stopped. And after about an hour and a bit, closer to 2 hours of trying to revive him, he was pronounced deceased. And we lost our Matthew. Apparently the cancer is Burkitt's lymphoma, and it's been known to spread rapidly throughout the body. And Matthew just, he didn't have a chance. We didn't find it in time. So because it's, he passed away on December 16th. So for the month of December, I'm going to have a donation link on the website, thatcanadianpodcast.ca. For you to donate to the Canadian Cancer Society, you just have to click the donate button. It's under a picture of Matthew and my husband and I, and it'll bring you right to the donation page. And if you choose, you can donate in memory of Matthew, in memory of one of your loved ones, or in honor of one of your loved ones who was battling cancer and survived, or is just currently battling cancer. And if you don't live in Canada, by all means, you can donate to the Canadian Cancer Society, or you can donate to whatever cancer society is local to you. The second thing we're going to talk about is some changes to the podcast. Andrew and I will no longer be doing movie reviews. We, as much as we enjoyed it, it made us feel like we couldn't enjoy watching movies anymore. It felt like every movie we watched, we had to write down our feelings, what we thought of it, all that stuff, and it just took the joy out of doing that. So we decided for that reason, we're just going to cancel the ASMR show. That's not to say that you'll never hear a review from us. If we do find a movie to be really good or just awful that you need to avoid, we'll tell you, but it will not be a reoccurring segment. It'll be a once in a blue moon segment on the podcast. What will be recurring segments is true crime stories, conspiracy theories. I may not believe in all of them. if any of them, but nonetheless, I will share them. Creepy stories, just like I did on Freaky Friday. Whether they're true or not, I still enjoy sharing them with you. And probably some other things along that line. Instead of posting twice a week, I'll just be posting once every Friday. Still uploading at 10 a.m. And hopefully in the future, I'll be able to collab with other creators. So make sure you keep listening and telling your friends to listen and like and follow on our Instagram posts and account. That way other creators would be more inclined to do a collaboration. With all of that being said, let's dive into today's episode. Now, today's episode could be a controversial one. I'm not sure, really. It's something that I believe in. I've read a lot of stories that point to it being true. So without dancing around the topic, it's about reincarnation. And, you know, there's stories that you hear or read about that are just, it leaves room for debate and for questioning. But this story of Dorothy Eady, she's also known as Om Seti, is just so convincing. There's so much proof and evidence that leaves little room for doubt. And if you're someone who doesn't believe in reincarnation or the possibility of it, or if you're on the fence, I encourage you to listen to this podcast and let me know what you think at the end, and really try to go into it with an open mind. And then maybe your opinions will change, even if it's just a little bit. And if not, that's totally fine. And I really would, if your mind doesn't change, I would love to hear why it didn't change, or if it does change, why it did. In addition to Dorothy's story, there are stories that I've read about other kids, which, they share their own stories, and I really do find them convincing. Not all of them, but I find some of them convincing as well. And I do plan on talking about it in later episodes, but today is about Dorothy Eady. Now, Dorothy was born in Blackheath, East Greenwich in London in 1904. She was your average kid in the average family, middle-class family. She was, your typical toddler. And at one point when she was 3, she actually took a tumble down some stairs and it caused some pretty serious injuries. Obviously, her parents rushed her to the hospital as quickly as they could because, your baby just fell down some stairs. And shortly after arriving at the hospital, Dorothy was unfortunately pronounced deceased. And, the parents obviously would have been devastated. They just lost their 3-year-old. Any parent would be devastated. About an hour or so after being declared deceased, one of the doctors went in to prepare Dorothy's body to go to the funeral home. And when they went into the morgue, now this is so creepy, when I heard it, I got goosies all over my body and just chills down my spine. When the doctor walked into the room, they saw little Dorothy sitting up on the table playing. I don't know what she was playing with. It doesn't say in anything that I've read, but, you're walking into a room where you expect to prepare a deceased child's body for transport to the funeral home, and you walk in and the kid's sitting there playing. Like, I think I would have quit my job. It's not funny. It's good that, she wasn't dead, but it's not funny. But I would have quit my job. That would have terrified me. I would have been like, okay, I'm done. And I would have noped out of there so fast. But anyway, so can you imagine for a second, just close your eyes. You imagine that you walk into this room, you see the child that you just pronounced deceased playing, just sitting there playing as if nothing happened. And you're like, well, shit, now I gotta call the parents. How awkward of a phone call would that be? I mean, you're calling with good news, like their kid that they thought was dead is actually alive. Like, that's great news. But can you imagine how awkward that would be? The doctor would have been like,
hey, Mr. and Mrs. Eady, it's Dr. So-and-so, and, I'm calling with some news. So Dorothy isn't dead. When I went to check on her and prepare her body, she was playing on the table, so yay.
I don't know. I can't imagine how awkward that would have been, and then what the parents would have thought afterwards. They probably were pissed off, and, you know, even more relieved than pissed off. But still, your kid was dead. You went through that heartbreak, and now your kid's alive? It would have seemed like a sick joke, at least to me. Anyway, shortly after she came home, she started talking about when she was sleeping. She was a toddler, right? So I don't know how she would have referred to, hey, I was dead for a little while and this is what I saw. But she ended up saying that when she was, I'm just going to say that she claimed she was sleeping just for the sake of the story. So when she said she was sleeping, she saw this beautiful garden and there was all these plants and it felt like home. And she kept saying all she wanted to do was go home. She wanted to go back to this garden. And it didn't make sense to her parents. And she kept on with this story. She didn't change her story. She didn't stop talking about it. She just kept going. She kept up with the story. And it really baffled her parents as to how she got all this in her head. Keep in mind, she's 3 years old. How can a three-year-old come up with all this information about a place she's never been? And so at some point when she was four, her parents decided to take her to the British Museum. And as soon as they walked into the ancient Egypt exhibit, she ripped herself away from her parents and threw herself to the ground and just started crying and saying that she was finally home. And obviously, you know, I've said this before, but her parents were clearly baffled. Like, what is going on? Why does my kid think this is home? It's a museum. It's just an exhibit. Like, she lives at home with us, you know? And so as they made their way through this exhibit, she would kiss the feet of different statues of deities or pharaohs, or, you know, she would go around and kiss the feet of all these things. And she would say, I'm home, I'm home, I'm finally home, and crying. And I don't know about you, but any experience I've had with, you know, a 3 or 4 year old, they talk about, I mean, this is different times, but they talk about, you know, the shows or the stories or their toys or, you know, the puppy they saw. Now, I'm not a parent, so I clearly don't really know what I'm talking about, but they don't say that ancient Egypt is home, and they don't talk about gardens and temples and things they should have no business knowing at that age. And so this alone to me is proof that this kid has obviously lived through something some other time. In my mind, there's no other way she could have known anything about this unless she really did experience the memories of her past life when she was, I guess, in her sleep state between when she died and when she came back. Eventually, they made it through to this spot in the exhibit where there was a picture of this place called the New Kingdom Temple. And as soon as she saw it, she instantly started saying that that's where she's from, but she doesn't know where the trees are. She doesn't know where the gardens are. And they're not depicted because, you know, it's a picture of a temple that existed thousands of years before. I think it was sometime around like 3,000 years before. As she kept getting older, she still stuck with this belief and this desire to know more about ancient Egypt. So any chance she got, she would go to the British Museum and learn as much as she can about that time period. And that's eventually where she met a man named E.A. Wallace Budge, who was a well-known Egyptologist at the time. And once they got to talking, he told her that she really needs to learn how to read hieroglyphics. He felt that it would be a new door for her story, a new door for her to find out what happened in her past life. Whether he believed she had a past life or not, I don't know. But he felt that learning hieroglyphics would help her. Now, her family was a religious family. They would often attend church on every Sunday. And from what I've read, there's different sources, obviously. And I've read that their family were Catholics. I read that they were Christians. So I'm not quite sure what to go by. I don't know enough about religion to say maybe they're the same thing. From what I understand, they're not. Maybe there's like a section where they combined the two. I don't know. If you know, tell me. Tell me in the comments for this episode. And so the family would attend church every Sunday, and Dorothy would be brought to Sunday school as well. And this is where she started questioning the teachings of the church. She would even sing the incorrect hymns, just rebelling against the teachings, I guess. And this is eventually what led her to be kicked out of Sunday school. I guess because she had such a cemented belief in the memories that she had and everything that she's learned about ancient Egypt, she just couldn't find a way to believe what was being taught, because in her heart, that's just not what she believed. Eventually, during World War I, she went to live with her grandmother in Sussex, and when she was living there, she continued to learn about Egypt's history, and she would often attend the Eastbourne Public Library to get her information. And when she was 15 years old, she claims to have been visited by the pharaoh Seti I in her dreams. And these visits made her, or not made her, but because of these visits, she started sleepwalking, she would have nightmares. And when the pharaoh visited her, he would tell her about her previous life. And she wrote down all of these stories and all of these details in hieroglyphics on over 70 pages of paper, just detailing her whole life. Well, her previous life. She was told things like her name was Bentrashit, which meant harp of joy. Her father was a vegetable seller, and when she was 3, her mom passed away, and because her father was a busy man tending to the farm, he brought her to a temple called Qom El Sultan, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, where she was raised to be a priestess. And when she was 12, the high priest of the temple asked her if she wanted to leave the temple and live amongst everyone else in the village, or if she wanted to stay at the temple and become a consecrated virgin. Now, she didn't really fully understand what was being asked of her. She didn't really understand her choices, so she decided to take her vows and stay at the temple. Since she decided to take her vows, she was asked to play a role in an annual play called Osiris's Passion and Resurrection. Apparently, only a priestess consecrated to Isis could play this role. During one of the showings, Seti I came in to see the performance, and that's where they met, they fell in love, they became lovers, and made a baby. Once she realized she was pregnant, she talked to the high priest, and she told him who the father was, and the high priest was taken aback, and he said that this offense against Isis was so terrible that the penalty at trial would most likely result in death. And because she loved the pharaoh Seti, she decided to take her own life, just so that way nothing would go to trial and he wouldn't be embarrassed. Because Dorothy was having all of these visions and obsessively writing her story in hieroglyphics, her parents were obviously very concerned for her mental well-being. So they often admitted her into several different medical facilities where she would be tested and observed, and nothing came out of it. Nothing out of the ordinary. There was no concern by the doctors whatsoever. After years of continuing her education on ancient Egypt, she eventually met a man, and she and this man would marry in 1931, and shortly after marriage, they moved to Egypt and had a baby named Seti in honor of the pharaoh that she knew and loved in her past life. And again, it's said that whenever they moved to Egypt, as soon as they arrived, she was so happy, she fell to the ground and kissed it, again saying that she was finally home. People started to think that she was a little odd or off. She would do things like remove her shoes whenever visiting the 5th dynasty pyramid of Unas, and she would even bring an offering. This kind of behavior made the people in the upper class family that she married into very uncomfortable, and it was things like this that eventually led to the separation of her and her husband in 1935. So once Dorothy and her husband did separate in 1935, Dorothy kept her son Seti, and the two moved to Iraq, where she took on a teaching job. Apparently, this teaching job was located closer to the Giza pyramids, which only made her happier because she got to be closer to where she felt she belonged. It was there that she met an Egyptian archaeologist named Salim Hussein, and he worked in the antiquities department, so he employed her as his secretary. Now, she was the first female employee, which, I mean, you go girl. She wrote articles, essays, books, and all in her own name, which was completely unheard of at the time. She even helped different archaeologists with translating their articles to English, checking the grammar. She was definitely an asset to the archaeologists that she was working with. And she gained a pretty stellar reputation, paving the way for women in that industry, which I absolutely love. It was work and accomplishments like this that made her one of the most famous Egyptologists in her era, and rightly so. Eventually, when her mentor passed away, she was quickly employed by a man named Ahmed Fakhri for the excavations in Dahshur. The villagers in the area really respected her. And this was because she was so accepting of everyone's beliefs. She would fast with the Muslim villagers during Ramadan, and she even celebrated Christmas with the Christians. She just didn't discriminate against anyone or any of their beliefs. And the villagers really appreciated this. Eventually, she moved to Arabet Abdos. I hope I pronounced that right. It's located in an area of the mountains that's said to lead to Amenti and the afterlife. And it was in this area that she earned the nickname Om Seti, which means Mother of Seti. And I guess because in this area or this village, it was common or tradition for people to call the mothers by the first name of their firstborn. So they would say Om Seti or whatever the child's first name was. Now, she was 52 years old when she moved to this area, and she was dedicated. She was committed to undoing this ancient sin that Bentrashit committed. And from what I found, it said that this village is close to the temple where Bentrashit grew up, where she was raised. While working with a few different archaeologists in excavating the Temple of Seti, she was asked to stand in darkness in front of walls of hieroglyphics, and she was asked to tell co-workers what was written on the wall without even seeing them. And to their surprise, she was able to do so successfully, even though nothing had been published on this area yet. So people couldn't say that, oh, well, you know, she's been studying ancient Egyptology or whatever you call it all her life, so she must have known what it said on there. She must have just remembered. No, this stuff has never been published. She just knew what was on there. She knew the layout. She knew where the gardens were. She knew where the secret rooms were. There was just no way that she could have made any of this up because none of it was published yet, which just, it further cemented the fact that she had lived through this past life, and she would leave her fellow employees in awe because of how accurate she was. And she even mentioned that there was a secret tunnel somewhere. Actually, she mentioned it a couple of times from what I read. One was discovered, and another one, she never actually drew a picture or map or whatever of where it was, and I'm not 100% sure why. I think maybe it was because the dig was, the excavation, or however you want to word it, was canceled before she got the opportunity. I'm not quite sure. To be completely honest with you, I would love to be put in that situation. I myself love ancient Egypt, but just to see Om Seti tell her experiences and her past life stories, it just would have been so incredible. In 1969, Om Seti, Dorothy, eventually retired and found part-time work making small items and random trinkets to sell to her friends and to tourists who would come visit the area. And she even found part-time work giving guided tours around the Temple of Seti, which, again, would be so amazing to see. And, I mean, you can go and have a tour of any landmark, but imagine having a tour of a landmark such as the Temple of Seti and be told the stories of life there from someone who claims to have lived during that time. I wish. I'm sorry. I really wish I could do something like that. I mean, hearing somebody tell the story, I know, I'm repeating myself, but I wish that I could do that to this day. Actually, if you know of any people like this or places like this or people working at places like this that I would find interesting, similar to this story, tell me in the comments or send me an email. I would love, love, love to check it out. As soon as we're allowed to travel or feel comfortable traveling or have a vaccine that works, I guess. In 1972, Dorothy did end up having a heart attack. And while it was a mild heart attack, it made her think that, you know what, life is too short, even though she's on life two that we know of. Life is short and I need to further my experiences. I need to further learn what my life before was all about, what happened. So she ended up selling her house and she moved into a mud brick house next to a man named Ahmed Solomon, and he was the son of the temple's keeper. And I guess this mud brick house was closer to the temple than where she had lived before. After hearing Dorothy's story, the National Geographic Channel ended up filming a documentary about her and the life that she said she had before, and all the experiences that she'd gone through in her life now. The filming took place during March of 1981, which is roughly the same time as her 77th birthday party, and the documentary crew had to bring her up to the Temple of Seti for some last-minute filming, and unfortunately, it ended up being her last visit to the temple, where it said that she lived as a high priestess over 3,000 years before. Shortly after the filming of the documentary, Dorothy passed away on April 21st, 1981, and she was buried in the village next to the temple. Before death, Dorothy had a tomb constructed for her to be buried in upon her death, and it was located on the western side of the garden that she grew up in her previous life. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, I feel like this story is just further proof that there's more to this existence, that there's more to our existence than we think there is. There's probably some people who didn't believe before, maybe you believe now, or you still don't believe, and I want to hear what changed your mind or why your mind didn't change. I want to hear what your thoughts are on this topic. So please, I encourage you to go to thatcanadianpodcast.ca, find this episode, and write in the comment section what your thoughts are and tell me in detail what you think. Or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram. My handle is thatcanadianpodcast. Or if you're really wanting to connect with me, you can send me an email. My email address is thatcanadianpodcast@gmail.com. And please remember to visit my website, thatcanadianpodcast.ca, and find the section on the homepage where there's that donate button for you to donate to the Canadian Cancer Society in honor of my nephew, Matthew. That wraps it up for today. So thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. This has been That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian. And go hug your loved ones today. You never know when your last hug will be your last.